Tokyo Podcast Episode No. 45.
On this show, we take a look at the world of sushi with documentary filmmaker David Gelb, who joins us to talk about his latest film, Jiro Dreams of Sushi. Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of Tokyo Podcast. I'm your host, Anthony Joe. And I am very excited about today's show because on today's show, I'll be talking to the director of the documentary film, Jiro Dreams of Sushi. Now, if you haven't seen this film yet, I highly recommend checking it out because it is a fantastic documentary of 85-year-old Jiro Ono-san, who is widely considered to be the world's greatest sushi chef. And he owns the only Michelin 3-star rated sushi restaurant in the world. And the film follows his daily life in running his restaurant, his philosophies on work and life, and his relationships with his son, his staff, and his suppliers that all contribute to the success of his restaurant. And I really like this film for a number of reasons. If you love documentaries about food, you'll love it because the cinematography of the sushi and the preparation of the food is unbelievable. If you love films about Japan and seeing kind of the daily life of people in Japan and how go about their business, you'll also love it because there's a lot of shots of Jiro and his staff traveling to meet his different suppliers all around Tokyo, and you'll get a really great look at what daily life is here in Japan. So I'll be talking to the director, Mr. David Gelb, a little bit later on in the show. Before we get to David, I have a quick announcement I wanted to make in regards to the future of Tokyo Podcast. Recently, I have accepted a job offer from the good folks at G Plus Media to be their director of business development. Now, if you don't know who G Plus Media is, chances are you're familiar with their portfolio. They are the media company behind Gaijin Pot, Japan Today, East Central, Real Estate Japan, and China Splash. And if you're a foreigner living in Japan or you want to come to Japan, chances are you visited Gaijin Pot at one point in time. I think every foreigner in Japan knows who Gaijin Pot is. So my responsibilities will be to create new business strategies for Gaijin Pot and Japan Today to make those two websites an even better experience for foreigners who are already in Japan or foreigners who want to come to Japan. So I'm anticipating that this job is going to be a very fun and challenging position. However, I also anticipate it's going to be a very demanding one. As a result, I am going to have to cut back on the number of shows I produce for Tokyo Podcast. Currently, I do one show a week, and that in itself is almost a full-time job. And so I want to be able to focus all my energies on my position at G Plus Media. And so what I'm going to do with Tokyo Podcast is I'm going to take it down to bi-monthly. Is that right? Two times a week? No. I'm going to do great at this job. I'm going to take Tokyo Podcast to twice a month. How's that sound? Twice a month. I think it's bi-monthly. I don't know. So instead of once a week, I'm going to go down to twice a month. And I think that should be able to balance out my work schedule with being able to produce Tokyo Podcast. If I find that I'm not as busy as I thought, of course, I'll take it back up to once a week. But for now, so I can concentrate fully on my duties at G Plus Media, I'm going to take Tokyo Podcast down to twice a month. So if you'd like to support me in my new venture, I'd love to hear your thoughts on the gaijinpod.com website. My goal is to make Gaijin Pod the number one resource for foreigners who are in Japan or interested in coming to Japan. And for those of you who have used this site, I'd love to hear your feedback on what you thought about it. Did you use it to find a job? Did you use it to find an apartment? Post something in the classifieds? How did you use it? And how can we make it better? Send me your feedback, both positive or negative, because I can take all that and work hard to make Gaijin Pot number one. So if you want to send me your thoughts, feel free to do so off my website at tokyopodcast.com/contact. Jiro Dreams of Sushi is a documentary film that follows the daily life of 85-year-old Jiro Ono-san, who is widely considered to be the world's greatest sushi chef. The film is an intimate look at Jiro's philosophies on work and life and his insistence on absolute perfection at making sushi. The film also explores the secondary characters that all contribute to the success of the restaurant, from the fish seller at the Tsuzuki Market to the restaurant staff who struggle to meet Jiro's high standards to the tense relationship Jiro has between him and his eldest son, who is patiently waiting in the wings to take over the restaurant once his father retires. Jiro Dreams of Sushi has received rave reviews from critics around the world and currently enjoys a 99% approval rating on the Rotten Tomatoes website. I am very pleased to welcome to Tokyo Podcast the director of Jiro Dreams of Sushi, Mr. David Gelb.
Hi, it's a pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Where did the idea for this movie come from? Have you always been into sushi or what happened?
I really, really love sushi. I've loved it my whole life. I went to Japan for the first time when I was 2 years old on a business trip with my dad, and my parents fed me cucumber rolls, and I've been hooked on sushi ever since. I would cry if I didn't get it. So I just love sushi, and I thought, you know, what a great way, you know, how can I make it? I would ask myself, how can I make it my job to eat the best sushi in the world? And I would eat at every sushi restaurant in Los Angeles, which is where I've been living for the last 10 years, and you know, trying to figure out, you know, who the best was. And, you know, I would shoot little video clips of my favorite sushi chefs. And originally, I thought I might make a movie about, you know, 4 or 5 different sushi chefs. But when I met Jiro, I realized that, you know, it could be so much more than just a movie about sushi. You know, it can be a movie about hard work and about family and all that kind of stuff that's involved in a human journey, and then set it in the world of sushi. You know, that might be a better movie.
What was your first encounter with Jiro like?
Well, I first went there with Yamamoto, the food critic, who appears in the film and is kind of like our narrator. And, you know, I was very nervous when I went to the restaurant because I really, you know, I knew, you know, he's a living legend, and I wanted him to like me, you know, because I want to make this movie about him. I wanted him to be impressed with the, you know, that I ate sushi, you know, really well with, you know, chopsticks and whatever it was, you know, I could do to impress him. Because it's sort of like, you know, having Jiro hand you a piece of sushi is, I guess you could liken it to like Michael Jordan passing you a basketball or something.
Right.
You really don't want to drop it. So,
right.
You know, I was nervous, and, you know, I ate, the meal was really fast, and, you know, he was incredibly stoic. You know, he doesn't talk to the customers when he's working. You know, he just is just making sushi, and it's just incredibly quiet, you know, atmosphere. But the sushi was so delicious. I mean, it was really incredible. So, you know, all the hype about how good his sushi is, it's absolutely true. I mean, it's amazing.
Were you nervous? When I was watching your movie, you know, I'm in Tokyo, right? I thought, man, I want to go down there. But I kind of got a little bit nervous thinking about it, wondering, would I be able to appreciate how good his sushi is? You know, what if I don't get it? What if I don't notice it? Were you nervous at all about that?
Yeah, well, that would have been disappointing, I think. But, you know, if you really do love sushi and you've eaten at some good sushi restaurants, then, you know, you're going to have a good culinary experience there. If you prefer California rolls and like spicy tuna rolls, and, you know, you're used to kind of barking orders at your sushi chef and telling him what to make, then, you know, and you're maybe this isn't the restaurant for you.
Right.
So it's not an experience for everybody. And you have to kind of go in there with the right expectations. You know, the meal is going to be fast. It's going to be like 30 minutes long. He's going to serve you what he wants. You know, he doesn't make things custom for you. You know, he'll make it custom from his own perspective, which is to make, you know, he'll look at the size of your mouth and make the perfect shape of it, you know, shape of sushi for you, you know.
Wow.
But he's not going to take orders from the customer, and, you know, it's really, come to his restaurant, you're going to eat sushi his way.
I noticed in the film that there wasn't a lot of footage of customers filming. There was a brief section, but there wasn't a lot. What was the atmosphere like in the restaurant when you were filming and you saw people eating there? What was it like? Is it casual? Is it very formal?
I mean, it's really quiet. It's sort of like being in a temple, I would say. It's like a sushi temple.
Right.
And so, you know, you're quiet and you have kind of a deep reverence for everything that he's doing. The only sound in the restaurant really is, you know, air conditioning and the trickle of the fountain that he keeps at the entrance. I didn't shoot too. I didn't shoot too often when customers were in the restaurant because we kind of had an agreement that I wouldn't disturb his customers if I could avoid it. So you know, I would shoot a lot of the time when the restaurant was closed, when they're doing the preparation. I would have kind of my close-ups of sushi after the restaurant closed, and they would do another kind of course just for the camera. But, you know, people come to the restaurant and, you know, they're regulars and, you know, that just love to eat there. Because the sushi is just so good. And, right. You know, it's just a place where you can just quietly enjoy sushi.
How did you manage to convince Jiro to be in the film? Because as I understand it, he's a very private individual. Is that right?
That is true. You know, he's private. Well, he's quiet, you know, when he's working. Right. But, you know, he's been on TV a lot. You know, he's been on NHK a number of times. They've done an episode of The Professional about him. And they also did an episode. I think they have a series called When They Were Young. And so they kind of reenacted his childhood. So, you know, he gets interviewed and, you know, he does a fair amount of press. But he hasn't had someone coming to the restaurant to film every day for such a long period of time.
Right.
So that was kind of a hurdle. But thanks to Yamamoto, he kind of helped me convince Jiro to do it. And, you know, I went to Japan all by myself. I had a translator on the ground there who I worked with, but I was really quite isolated. And I think that, you know, he sensed that I had a passion for this and I didn't have a lot of money. I just came out with a bunch of camera equipment and was ready to make the best film that I could. And he kind of took me under his wing sort of as a student. And, you know, I had no kind of preconceived notions about what his story should be. I was just curious. I wanted to know. And I think that he appreciated that, you know, right. That I just wanted to learn.
Right. Well, mm-hmm. That must have been, you must feel a huge sense of relief, Faye, coming to Japan by yourself, just because you shot the film yourself, right?
I did, yeah.
So to have this film be such a huge success must be a huge relief for you.
I'm so glad that I worked my butt off on this thing for like a year. You know, I was barely, you know, I would go and shoot for as much as I could. And then I would go back to my my apartment. I rented an apartment out there and I would just, I was editing movie trailers, which is kind of my like day job. You know, I have a company called City Room Creative that does entertainment marketing. So we do movie trailers and we do movie posters. And so I was just basically doing that. I was spending all my savings on it. You know, right. I put everything into it. And so just the fact that people are watching it at all is such an incredible like relief and like so satisfying. You know, I couldn't be happier.
Right. What was that like when you first came to Japan? I can't even imagine how difficult the language barrier must have been in trying to get your film going here. Like, you don't speak Japanese, do you?
I speak a little bit. Okay. Not really particular. I can speak some phrases with, you know, confidence, and my pronunciation isn't bad. So, you know, I make the effort. And I think that, you know, my subjects, you know, Jiro and Yoshikazu and everybody at the fish market, everybody that I filmed, I was there with the translator, but I would do my greetings and my thank yous and everything myself. Right. So they could see that I was, you know, I'm trying to kind of, what's it called, like assimilate into the culture as possible. But they were incredibly patient and generous with me with their time because, you know, conducting an interview where I don't speak fluent Japanese and I'm working with a translator takes longer than a normal interview.
Right.
So, you know, but they really did a lot to help me. And but it definitely wasn't easy. And I'll definitely think twice before I make anything again in a foreign language.
Yeah, I can't even imagine what the editing process of that must have been like, because I do some editing here myself, just some promotional videos for this other company, but it's all in Japanese, and I don't really understand a lot of what's being said. And I mean, my videos are like 5 minutes that we put on YouTube. I can't, when I was watching that, I was thinking, God, how in the world did you edit this video not being able to understand what people were saying?
Yeah. Well, it wasn't easy, but, you know, we came up with a system that worked for us. You know, we would take the interviews and, you know, any material with dialogue, and we put them on a Final Cut Pro timeline. And I had translators subtitle the raw footage in Final Cut Pro. So then we could edit subtitled footage.
Right. Oh, okay. And
that's kind of how we did it, but it was incredibly time consuming and expensive to do, but it was necessary. And, you know, that's, again, that's the difficulty of, you know, making a film in a foreign language is, you know, it just takes a lot. You need a lot of extra help.
When you first started making the movie with Jiro-san, is the final product kind of what you had in your mind, or did it change over the course of your time with him?
It changed. The style of the movie was pretty much exactly what I was hoping it was going to be. But the story definitely evolved. On the first trip, I think I focused a lot more on Jiro-san himself. And, I thought that maybe the main thread of the story would really be about him and his pursuit of perfection. But as the filming went on, I began to realize that Yoshikazu, Jiro's son, really kind of was becoming the main character of the movie in a lot of ways, because he's the one who's confronted with the challenge of succeeding his father. So we kind of started to make the movie more and more about Yoshikazu and about this story about succession and living up to your father's expectations and living up to the expectations that others have of you because of your father. And these are very kind of tangible, real feelings that I think a lot of people have. And, right. I think the movie became more and more of a human journey as we shot it. And I think that's an improvement for the better, for sure.
Did that resonate with you at all? Because your dad is quite famous as well. Did you kind of feel a connection with him in his situation?
Oh, totally, totally. And my dad did as well, because, my grandfather was the managing editor of the New York Times. And so my grandfather was this kind of big shot in journalism. And my dad kind of, I think he felt like he was in his father's shadow. And then my dad kind of made a name for himself in making films about classical music, classical musicians, and then later running the Sony Classical record label. And now he's at he's the manager of the Metropolitan Opera in New York. And so I kind of feel the similar pressure to Yoshikazu, for sure. And also, I look at Jiro and he reminds me so much of my grandfather, because my grandfather is in his 80s and he's still, he was a journalist and, he's a writer, and both of my grandparents are writers and they're still writing every day and they refuse to retire and they just don't want to quit.
Right.
And, I see a lot of, I feel for that. And, so I identify with it through my own grandfather.
Right. There's one scene in there that I particularly like. Is the I can't remember his name, but one of the staff members, when he's talking about having to make the egg dish over 200 times and then finally getting it right, and then Jiro calls him shokunin.
Yep.
And when you're interviewing him, you can just see how excited he was to be given that title. But like he says, when he was in front of Jiro, he can't express that. He has to be, grateful and thankful. But I think many people can kind of connect with that emotion that you finally get something right. And inside you're just screaming, but then outside, yeah, you got to remain calm.
And and that's the Japanese culture it's a lot of restraint and kind of repression involved, I found. But when you hit those highs, I'm sure that as soon as he got home, he was jumping up and down with joy, but right. You're always trying to play it cool for the sensei,
Right. Did you encounter any difficulty, like negativity in filming at the Tsuzuki Market?
That's a good question. Because, I was filming right as The Cove kind of became this big international phenomenon and people started talking a lot more about overfishing and stuff kind of because of The Cove.
Right.
People were in the fish market were often a bit cautious and kind of suspicious of, the American guy walking around with a video camera, because they've seen those guys before, and last time they didn't make such a flattering, piece about them.
Right.
So, they were suspicious. Jiro's vendors were always incredibly kind to me and gracious, because Jiro and Yoshikazu asked them to be, and they asked them to participate in the film. But the other guys, some of the guys in the tuna auction especially, were definitely wary. And, I didn't even get into the tuna auction despite my best efforts until my second trip. I shot the film in two portions. Once in January in 2010, I shot 1 month. And then I came back and edited for 6 months and then went back in August of 2010. And when I went back in August, I was finally able to convince them to let me into the fish market. But they were, they're very cautious. And but I kind of convinced them, because I told them I wanted to show the network of masters behind the master.
Right.
And my movie's about the art of sushi. It's not, really about overfishing. It's really just about Jiro. It's about the art of sushi. And I want to show how it's a team effort. and how, you know, there's artistry in the selection of the fish, in the preparation of the fish, and the way that they serve it as well.
Right, right. I personally found that part just fascinating. Did these masters in their own section, you know, their own craft, the guy who picks the tuna, the guy who makes the rice, I found it interesting that Jiro chooses this one guy, and he's like the rice master guy.
Absolutely. He just wants to work with the best people always. And it's actually very similar to like filmmaking. I found like the whole thing, and I put it into filmmaking terms because I am a filmmaker. But, you know, traditionally filmmaking is a team effort. And, you know, with the new technology and stuff, I've found ways to do it with less team members. But, you know, there's a director, there's a producer, there's a cinematographer, there's a sound operator. You know, and the same thing in sushi. You know, there's a tuna guy, there's a rice guy, there's a seaweed guy. You know, it's the same thing. And Jiro is like the director of the sushi production. So I think it's very cool, and I love that teamwork. And on the DVD and Blu-ray, we have a series of bonus features. We have four kind of additional in-depth vignettes, kind of short stories with the masters that are not in the film. So we have like a short story about the octopus guy, the shrimp guy, and when I say guy, I mean vendor. So the tuna vendor,
right.
Shrimp, the octopus vendor, and the rice vendor, to go even more in depth into that. Because these guys, the rice vendor, he's been spent his entire life mastering rice, like figuring out the best way to source rice. And same with the guy shrimp. And so it's like this kind of specialization is one of my favorite things about Japanese culture.
Right.
Find something small that seems simple and you just master it and dedicate your life to it and become the best at it. I think it's such a cool thing.
Were you surprised at the dedication of all these different vendors?
Oh, for sure. I mean, I had no idea that it was just one vendor who does shrimp. He only does shrimp.
Right, you know, yeah.
There are a bunch of shrimp vendors in there competing with each other. And it's so different from the way that we get seafood in the United States because so often, you know, like you'll buy it, you know, you'll go to a fish, you know, you go to Whole Foods or something and there's just like a seafood counter there.
Right.
Or, you know, when restaurants source fish, you know, they'll have a seafood supplier who will, you know, get them pretty much, you know, a little bit of everything. But in Japan, you know, in the tsukiji market, there's just such specialization. It's like a city of people who have dedicated their lives to these very specific things. And I think it's amazing. And I was completely surprised and blown away by it. And I'm glad that I've been able to kind of share that.
Right. The cinematography in your film is getting a lot of rave reviews. Was this the intention to kind of film it? I remember in an interview you said that you wanted to film it kind of in that planet, what's it called?
Planet Earth
style, right.
Like there's this BBC documentary miniseries called Planet Earth, and right. It completely changed the way I look at like documentary cinematography. You know, many documentaries have a very you know, I mean, they're handheld and kind of you're using a small camera for a reason because, you know, you want to minimize your footprint. So you want the subject to feel comfortable. So that's why a lot of documentaries, you know, the cinematography, they're not really shooting with a very fancy camera necessarily. But for this film, I knew that I wanted a very elegant look. I wanted everything to be kind of refined and elegant like Jiro Sushi. So I tried to elevate everything. So when it came to the cinematography, I knew that, you know, I couldn't compromise that. And especially because sushi is so beautiful, you know, I had to shoot it with the best camera. So in order to achieve that, the first few days of the production, I didn't even bring a camera with me. I just hung out, got to know them. We became comfortable with each other. Then I started shooting on a 5D Mark II camera, which is like, it's a Canon. It looks like it's a DSLR camera. So it doesn't even look like a video camera really. And it's very it's very small, and we kind of became comfortable with each other with the camera. And then over time, after maybe 2 weeks or so, I started using the Red One digital cinema camera, which is a much larger camera, but with amazing image capabilities and amazing capacity for slow motion footage. And you know, at the time, it was the best digital camera in the world. And so I just felt like that was, you know, this is a film that requires, you know, a film about aesthetics and about art and about mastery really requires that effort from the filmmaker as well. And so, you know, I really wanted it to be beautiful and kind of moving. And, you know, it's in slow motion footage and kind of epic classical style music is a big part of that.
Right. Yeah. I love the pacing of the film. It almost feels like you're eating at a restaurant. You know, it's this nice kind of slow style. The stories are kind of form themselves. And the shots of the sushi just are so amazing. You know, you want to go down to the restaurant right away and place the order.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, we tried it. The whole thing is like, it's all metaphors on different levels, you know, like, you know, like the sushi concerto, the way that Yamamoto describes the way that you, you know, the way that his sushi course goes, you know, I mean, he's like a real kind of sushi poet. And so it was really cool to be able to kind of bring his perspective on the meal to life. I really love that. And so we try to do that throughout the whole film.
Right, right. And I take it all the shots of the sushi, you filmed it after the restaurant closed?
Most of them. Like most of like the kind of the heroic close-ups of the sushi, we call them hero shots. When
right.
It's like, as in like a superhero shot, when it's like this is like one of the best shots of the movie. Those shots often would take place after they're closed so that I didn't disturb their customers, which was kind of part of the deal, is that they didn't want me to disrupt the serenity of the restaurant. So the restaurant would be closed. I would sit up at the sushi bar with my camera on a tripod next to me, and the monitor would be kind of extended on an arm in front of my face so I could see it easily. And he would put the piece of sushi into the frame. I would check to make sure it was in focus, and then I would eat the piece of sushi. Mm-hmm. And that was the best moments of filming by far, because I got to just sit there and eat and also play with an awesome video camera.
Right.
So those are eating sushi and playing with cool video cameras. And so it was like one of the best experiences of my life, for sure.
Can you tell us about the DVD and Blu-ray, about what are some of the extras that are available on it?
Oh, sure. Well, we, you know, in the process of making this film, you know, every documentary starts out a lot longer than it finishes up. So, you know, this movie was in its first cut, maybe 2 hours long. So what you'll get to see on the DVD and Blu-ray are some of the deleted scenes, a lot more details about cooking. A bit more stories from Jiro and his life growing up, and more stories from Yoshikazu and from Takashi, Jiro's sons, about growing up with their dad. More, as I may have mentioned earlier, there's more about the individual vendors. We have four vignettes kind of called the Network of Masters, which are about the masters behind the scenes that are providing Jiro with his ingredients. So you'll get a lot more of kind of a full view of the of Jiro's world, and you know, stuff that we took out of the film simply because it didn't flow in the long form narrative. But if you're hungry for more, it's in there. We also have a commentary track, and the trailer's on there in HD, which is really nice. And there's also a gallery of sushi, so it's sort of like you can leave the DVD on; it'll be kind of like a screensaver with all of Jiro's sushi pieces on it.
Awesome. What was the reaction to the film like here in Japan?
You know, nobody in Japan has really seen the movie. The movie hasn't come out in Japan yet.
No kidding.
No. It took us forever to find a distributor in Japan to put the movie out. And we just got one, a fantastic distributor called Transformer, that's kind of taking a risk on the movie and releasing it. But, you know, I think that the hesitation was that, you know, a lot of the surprises to American audiences are not going to be as surprising to the Japanese, because, you know, they already know a bit more about kind of the way of the Shokunin and all that stuff. But I think that Japanese audiences are going to realize that it's not just a movie about sushi. You know, it's a movie about a human journey and an inspiring story. And I hope that they like the movie very much when it comes out in February.
So that's fantastic. So it's out in February in theaters here in Japan. But then people can also get it online through iTunes and Netflix as well. That's right?
Yeah, that's right.
Okay, perfect. Excellent. Well, thank you, David. Thank you for coming on the show. I really enjoyed talking to you. And all the best with your future filmmaking career.
Thank you so much. Great talking to you as well. And I enjoy your podcast. Thank you.
Thanks again to David for coming on the show. If you're interested in checking out his film, Jiro Dreams of Sushi, it is available on DVD and Blu-ray. You can also download it from the iTunes store, and it is available on Netflix as well. If you are in Japan and you're interested in checking out the actual restaurant, they do have a website. It is sushi-jiro.jp, and his store is actually located in the Ginza area. I believe it's in the Ginza subway station. So check out Sukiyabashi Jiro's website, and I'll post links to both of those websites on my site at tokyopodcast.com. Don't forget that a slight change in format for Tokyo Podcast going forward. I'll be producing a show twice a month now due to my increased commitments at G+ Media. And if you want to help me out with that, send me your feedback on your experiences with Gaijin Pod. Good good or bad. I want to know it all. You can do so on my website at tokyopodcast.com/contact. Or you can also send me a message on Facebook. I'm at facebook.com/tokyopodcast. And if you're a photographer, feel free to check me out on Instagram at tokyopodcast as well. And let me know, because I'm always looking for cool photographers in the Tokyo area to follow. That's it. Thanks for listening, everybody. I'm Anthony Joe, and bye-bye.